You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
I want to say I'm in shock. I'm not really in shock because this is just to be expected. With everything that's happening with our schools, with the critical race and all of the craziness with the masks and the COVID and the school boards, now we have a school in Oregon who has decided that they're going to drop any proficiency requirements in reading, writing, or math before graduation. Why? Because they're considering standardized testing or meritocracy testing as racist. And other school districts are eliminating special programs or schools for gifted students. This is crazy stuff. There is no way that mathematics, reading, or any proficiency tests are racist. For heaven's sakes, it is the job of the educators that our tax dollars are paying to do this job. And by the way, paying quite well and paying with pensions that they can live on for the rest of their lives, while they're supposed to be teaching our children, especially reading, writing, arithmetic. Those are the three basics that have been there since, you know, school started. And they are not choosing to do that. And taking the lazy way out, calling it racist, instead of making sure that each child has the attention that they need to get the skills that they need to get jobs, to be able to be productive citizens in their later years or their, you know, their years as soon as they graduate from high school.
It is unbelievable to me. I'm appalled. Just hearing about it, reading about it, I asked myself, how can they possibly come to this conclusion? What is driving this? What's the payoff, right? What is the payoff for these politicians and these school boards to decide that standardized testing should be abolished because it's racist? And I know that they're saying it's racist, and yet the research that I've done, everything that I've read about, I still don't understand actually how it's actually racist.
It's pretty impossible to be racist, isn't it? Two and two is four, no matter what right. color your skin is.
Exactly. And even... the conclusion I come to is that, again, it always goes back to power and money and power, right? So the politicians are funded, the Democrats are funded by the unions, okay? And the teachers' unions are big, big proponents of the Democratic Party, right? They're definitely in bed together. So... sort of one hand washes the other hand. And to make sure that they stay in power, right, they don't really want teachers, the unions do not want teachers to be evaluated by these standards. They don't want the teachers to be held accountable for what they teach, how they teach, and the children that they move on. And by removing these standardized tests, by saying, you know, when you graduate, you don't have to pass proficiency tests in reading, writing, or arithmetic any longer. There's no measurement. There's no measurement any longer to see if somebody is actually understanding the material, if they can function in society, if they can read a sign, if they can read a contract, forget reading a book, right? And if the premise is that it's racist, because these children feel bad about themselves because they are not doing well in reading, writing, and arithmetic, that they're not comprehending, and yet white students and Asian students are.
But you know what's interesting, Judy, about what you just said? That Charles Boyle, who's the deputy communications director, he was from Governor Brown's office, he said that the new standards for graduation will help benefit the state's Black, Latino, Latinx, Indigenous, mm-hmm. Asian, and Pacific Islander. I have to tell you that Asian students are head and shoulders above white students in how they perform in testing. Why? Because their parents make them work at their school. They make them do their homework. They work with them if there's something that they don't understand. So this is not going to, this is going to hurt the Asians a lot. And students of color, I disagree that any of the races that I just mentioned, any race at all is more deficient than another in how they can learn. They certainly may come from homes that do not promote learning, that do not help them with learning. That is why school teachers are there. That is their job. But, you know, we fly in space today because of a Black mathematician who was a woman, by the way. There is no lack of ability to learn due to the color of your skin. So that's what's so frustrating about this. I don't know. I almost see it as laziness. And do they just want to push kids through the system so they get a degree and say, okay, yay, we graduated everybody. I don't know. Where is the teachers that cared about what the students learned? What's happened to
them? What is appalling to me is that the very reason they say they want to implement these new standards or lack of standards is for everybody to be equal. And yet I think that by not figuring out how to help these children to read, write, and actually master arithmetic, they're sending them out in the world unable to function. And this is just daily function. Okay, so let's say, what do we want? We want everyone to be healthy. We want everyone, regardless of race, sex, anything, okay, to be able to provide for themselves, to get a job, provide for themselves, provide for their family. We want everyone to eventually, what's the American dream? Let's own a home. Let's own a car. Let's create a company. But if you cannot read, if you can't read and understand the written word, how are you ever going to read any contract? You are so vulnerable. This very act is causing each of these students, right, that are graduating with a diploma that says what? What does the diploma mean anymore? They are sending them out in the world completely ill-equipped, not just to be successful, but just to survive. I remember my Granny Rose, really, she could read English, but she struggled in writing it. And I remember my mom, my aunt, and then as we got older, we would literally read things to her, right? Make sure she understood them. And then we would be signing checks and we would be signing contracts and helping her. And it hindered her world. It hindered her life and her ability to be successful in this world. And if we keep dumbing things down, I think that this generation, in the next two generations, we will not be able to compete globally, because I can tell you that China is not doing this. I can tell you that Japan is not dumbing down their education. And we're going to have a whole generation of people who can't read, who can't write, but they're going to say they're happy.
Why would we as a society want to make our kids strive to be the lowest common denominator? So the lowest person in the class that perhaps has some sort of learning disability, who knows? That's what they're striving for. They're not striving for excellence. They're not striving for people to be the best that they can be. And that is it, that is a reverse racism. It's a reverse bigotry. They are destroying these kids' futures from them being able to be successful in later life. That is not what we pay our schools to do. And by the way, we are throwing more money into our schools than ever before. And a lot of it certainly goes to the unions, for which they put out all their political contributions and that type of thing. But they are not serving the children that they're there to be educating. And, you know, I mean, just on a related subject, nor are the school boards serving the parents who we see all over the country up in arms about critical race theory. And they will be up in arms about this in Oregon, I'm sure, that they have dropped standardized testing, which, by the way, they did very quietly. So they don't announce it to all of the families that they're doing this, because if I were a parent there, I would be in there at that school board meeting. But they are not listening to the parents. They are deciding for us, the parents and the taxpayer, what they are going to teach our children, what our children are going to be allowed to learn, and at what level. And the parents have no say at all. And I just think that that is so ass backwards than the way it should be. The parents should be the ones that are determining what the children learn. I mean, they need to be involved in what the curriculum is. These school boards and these unions have way too much power, and they are doing our future generations in America a huge disservice. This is despicable to do to children, because my guess is that more children than not in those schools, regardless of race, regardless of color of their skin, regardless of their home life, are perfectly able to learn all the things that they need to learn for their future. And to not provide them that opportunity is absolutely criminal.
It is. I think it's just going to be so damaging. And when I look at, if you don't measure performance, you never know, right? You don't know if you're headed in the right direction. You don't know if you don't have a plan and you don't measure your performance, how do you know somebody's in trouble? How do you know, right, if they need help? It's key. Measurement is key. And if you don't measure, if there's no standardized testing that is completely blind and unbiased, all right, then you don't know if somebody is struggling and doesn't understand a concept. And so what happens is it becomes punitive. Your standardized tests are what I consider lead indicators, right? It's, you know, your quizzes, your tests. It's to test your knowledge and your understanding of a concept. And if you don't have that measurement, then your teacher, who we've hired and we pay, okay, and obviously we give full benefit, vacation, they have medical, dental, eye, and lifetime retirement, okay, we don't give them the ability to come alongside that student and hold them capable, hold that student capable of understanding the concept at hand and overcoming the struggle that they're experiencing. What happens is all of a sudden you wait until the end of the year, or worse, when they're graduating from high school into with no skills, without understanding the concept, and then it becomes punitive. And then if you don't think society and our culture won't hold them accountable for not knowing, that student, that person will pay the price. That person is going to pay the price because they will not understand how to read a contract, sign a contract, put together a monthly budget. They will not be able to understand and decipher any sort of mathematical situation.
Well, they don't know if they're being cheated, right? They don't know if they get the right change. They don't know how to balance their checkbooks. I mean, these are just basic things that everybody has to do. And you and I, Judy, we both own businesses, and mm-hmm. I interview people to work for me. And I'm amazed. They cannot spell. They cannot do the very basic things. I mean, I remember years ago when I was interviewing people, oh my gosh, they'd come in, they could do this, they could do that. It was a pleasure. Now it's such a grind to have to interview people because they cannot function for the most part. Mm-hmm. Now, if you took two classes, and I want to see if you agree with this, you took two classes of students, equal age, equal race distribution, two classes, 30 kids in each class, and you put mm-hmm. a teacher in one and you put a teacher in another, and they are responsible for teaching the same things. But one teacher has this attitude that the kids can't learn because the learning is racist. And by the way, they'll get to keep their job because they don't have to do anything that the kids need, or the kids don't have to pass tests for that teacher to be considered a good teacher. They just get to keep their job, and there is no really accountability for how they're teaching. And the other teacher has a pride in their job, has a pride in each and every one of those kids, wants to make sure that they learn. They have the same curriculum, the same type of kids in each class. Do you not agree with me that one class would excel and one would not?
Absolutely. I think you have to hold people to certain standards across the board, regardless of race or gender. I don't really understand why we feel, or why people feel, like life is supposed to be fair, because really, life isn't fair. It's never been fair, and we're never going to make it fair. There's always going to be people who are going to game the system. There's always going to be bad people that take advantage of the underprivileged. There's always going to be people who want power and all the money and to control everything. And I feel that this only will make that easier for institutions, for politicians, for people in power, to lord it over the underprivileged. And the other point that I want to make is, so if you're trying to level the playing field, okay, if this is their premise, I want to level the playing field, I want it to be fair for everybody. I don't want to put pressure on any of the students, you know, because they are, let's say they come from broken homes. They don't have parents at home that are going to go over their homework, that are going to help them with their homework. All this is going to do is that anybody who already has money or power is going to take that money and power and take their students, their children, and put them in a private institution where there are going to be standardized tests, where there are going to be standards and measurements, and where their child, if they are gifted, there will be gifted programs. It will divide us by class even more so. And isn't that the very thing that they're trying to avoid?
Well, that's what they say. I almost feel, you know, I can't figure out any school system that would want to do this to the children, nor can I figure out any parents that would accept this being done. I just have to think that there is something nefarious happening mm-hmm. in our school systems that want children to stay dumbed down because they're going to be easier to control as we move towards socialism. But you're absolutely right. This will make two classes of people, the ones, as you said, that can afford to put their kids in private school, can afford to get them tutors, and those that have been inadequately educated by our system. And, you know, I mean, another thing that just happened, say, in Virginia, is that their school board in Loudoun County, which has just been a disaster with the critical race and now with the transgender, they have put a new policy in place that transgender students can use the restroom of their choice of and they must be called by the pronoun of their choice. So if they're a guy and they want to say that they're a girl, they can use the girls' restroom, they can play on the girls' sports teams, and the teacher and the other students have to refer to him as her. The amount of transgender students in Virginia is 0.07% of the school population, or about 4,000 kids in total in the state of Virginia. And that figure is true nationwide. So it's about 0.5 to 0.7% of the student population in any age group, and actually in any age group, all the way up to elderly people. Yet we are making rules for the 0.7% of people that affect the other 99.3% of students in a negative way. I don't understand that either. I just could not be more frustrated watching what is happening to our poor students in school. And I thank goodness that parents, especially like yourself, Judy, and so many other parents that are getting out there and getting involved and voting on these school boards and speaking out at the meetings and saying that they don't like what's happening. We need 1,000 times more of that. We need 1,000 times more of parents to get involved and stop this nonsense, because it is your children that are absolutely being hurt by this. And it is regardless of the color. A student of color is far more hurt by discontinuing testing, discontinuing the teaching of certain subjects, and by telling them that they are not smart enough to learn these by virtue of the color of their skin. That has to be one of the most damaging things we could possibly do, is accuse subjects which have no race of being racist and white supremacist.
Why don't we take all this money that we're spending, right, to pass these bills and to create all of those different programs? Why don't we create programs where we're inclusive of all the parents, where we create a space for the parents to learn themselves how to coach and how to participate in their child's education? Why don't we create, you know, spend money and support the family unit, right? Rather than say, oh gosh, you know, I mean, I fully understand what it's like to have or to be in the home of a single mom or a single dad, okay? Because that's how I grew up, right? And nobody was home when I got home, all right? Nobody was there to help me when, you know, I mean, I just got yelled at because I didn't do well in math, okay? I have ADD now because I'm 57. I used to have ADHD. But, you know, there was nobody at home to help me figure out and decipher and untangle and unpack all of the math equations. And wouldn't it, so instead of saying, gosh, because Judy is coming from a broken home and she doesn't have anybody, you know, they're not going to get a tutor for her and there's nobody at home to help her figure this out, let's just make sure that everybody else in her class has to stay at the same level she's at. I don't see how that's beneficial. Why not take our energies and our monies and create tutoring programs that are available to anyone, whether they're white, black, orange, red, anything, male or female, and have that available to them. Why? I don't understand why we have to dumb everything down. I don't. And I don't see how. The only thing that I can see is that by eliminating standards, that the union, it's harder to eliminate bad teachers.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And, I think we should eliminate the unions, any of those unions that have to do with the schools, period. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they can make bargaining boards, as they do in many of the police departments. They can make these groups that just do the bargaining for the teachers. But we don't need to have these unions with all of this pay coming out of their checks. And I have to tell you, I have many friends who work in school districts in administration. And what they tell me is horrifying. They say that the unions do not help them at all. When they go to them for anything, they have no idea how to help. They don't even know what their job should be. And they basically do nothing but take their money. And, that's not what they're supposed to be there for. They're supposed to be representing the people, the teachers and the people in administration who are paying their union dues. And that's not happening in many of the school districts, at least the ones that I'm hearing about. But the point, I think, Judy, that it just has to be that parents in Oregon, parents in Virginia, and I know they did complain about the new ruling on transgender vehemently, to the point where a teacher quit on the spot because she just would not do that. But parents have got to get involved and stop this. Or, they've got to figure out some way to get their kids in charter schools. But I think that the solution is voting these people out. School board elections are done in kind of odd times. They're not generally at the same time as your big elections. So when you go vote for the president, everybody goes and votes. The school board elections are generally done in an off time that may be the only thing on your ballot. And it may be, tied with a few other things that are local. All politics is local. And those elections are critically important. The elections for school boards, for mayors, for police chiefs, for district attorneys, for judges in your area where you live are absolutely critical to pay attention to, even more than the national elections, because all politics comes from there. It affects where people live. So people in Oregon need to get up to that school district and start complaining. And then they need to put some people in to elect that, can run against these people that are making these idiotic type of detrimental decisions for their children.
It's interesting. I think that what I'd like to say to our audience, that no matter what age you are, no matter whether you have children or not, you may think that, oh, I don't have children of school age right now, and so this really does not apply to me. Let me tell you, it applies to you. And it applies to you because we are weakening the next generation. We are taking away their ability to compete globally. And they are going to be our voice when we don't have a voice any longer. When you think about truly the aged, and who's running the country now, right? And if you want a voice, if you want this to remain a free America that is competitive and on the world stage, you need to go to your to the school board elections. You need to understand and do the research, do the work, find out who's running and what they believe in, what they're for, and get involved. If not, go and run yourself at least educate yourself on who these people are, what they stand for, and what they're going to do to the children, to these children who represent the future of America. That's, you know, it's one thing for us to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening, right? But this is what you have to do. And like you said, Linda, these are not just, I mean, I've done it myself. The election comes and I'm like, who's running for what? Again, who's on the school board? What do they believe? And I know that our lives are crazy. I know that everybody's in a different season, but you owe it to not just yourself, but your community, your state, your nation. You owe it to the future of this nation to do your research, do your homework, and understand who you're voting for and who is representing you.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Listen to the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Well, I'd like to introduce our host today and welcome back to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. And I am sounding off today with Judy Moran, one of my very favorite ladies, who Judy just moved from Michigan to Arizona. And I want to say what she does. She is the director of client relations at the 12-week year. And if you have not read the book, The 12-Week Year, written by her husband, Brian Moran, it will change your life. Get a hold of that book and then give Judy a call and get some scheduling done for your organization. Judy, how is it being in Arizona compared to Michigan, especially since you're in the heat of the summer?
Oh my gosh. It's, I have to tell you, it's fantastic. I love it. I love everything about Arizona. I really, really do. I don't mind the heat. I know everybody says, oh, you know, it's a dry heat. And even though it's 111 degrees, it's completely bearable. But as you know, I mean, there's summer Brian and there's winter Brian, and that's why we moved. We like summer Brian better than winter Brian.
I think a lot of people feel that way about dreary winters.
I know. I bought him this sign for Christmas and it said, I'm sorry for what the things I said when it was winter.
Linda Martinelli, and I am located in Texas, and I am also the host of Talking While Married with my brilliant husband, Dr. Ron Martinelli. Listen to us every weeknight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know what's happening, speaking of men and husbands, Judy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it seems that men are having a difficult time making friends these days. It seems like there is a friendship recession in the life of American men. And there was a study done last May that said that Americans are suffering from a shortage of friendships and that men are faring the worst. What do you think?
Well, I agree. It's interesting because, you know, I read a couple articles about that and, you know, listened to a couple different vlogs on it. And what's interesting to me, though, is that I personally don't feel like this is a new phenomenon. I think that everybody can say that women are definitely more relational than men are. And I don't know if it's a chemical thing, a physical thing, you know, dating back to, you know, caveman where, honestly, when you look at the animal world, in any situation, you can see, like, for instance, with the horses, right? We raise horses, and the brood mares, the female horses, always have close relationships, and there's always a competition among the men, among the male, the stallions. And the stallions are running around trying to, obviously, procreate, right? And that's their main focus. And where the girls are like,
standard everywhere, Judy.
Right? Yeah, it is standard everywhere. But you will see these, you know, the brood mares are inseparable, right? And I just think that that's part of it. I think it's sort of like fighting an uphill battle. I think that, you know, if Brian has two or three really close friends, you're a rich man. This study said only about 27% of men have at least six close friends. Well, that's a lot of close friends, right? I mean, in this world, you know, especially through Facebook and all the travel, and it's not just the guys in your neighborhood anymore, right? That you're friends with. But I do feel that the contributing factors would be obviously COVID, right? We're all locked up. Secondly, though, all of the electronics. I have two girls, and they don't play Xbox really. They're not so interested in that. But little boys are just, you know, my cousin, she has two boys, I have two girls. And those boys can spend the whole day not talking to one person and just, you know, playing attack games all the time. And there's no socialization. There's no, you know, there is no way to actually connect with another human being. We don't have actual conversations any longer, not even hardly on the phone. Now we just text or email or send, you know, Facebook Messenger. And I think that you need to cultivate a relationship with FaceTime. This is kind of funny. We laugh about it, but in our marriage and with Brian and I, Brian's wonderful. He's friendly. He's funny. He's intelligent. But the real, you know what I mean, relationships are cultivated by me in our life, right? We meet a couple and I'm the one that initiates. I'm the one that, you know, plans and cooks the meals and brings people together. And, I'm always much more, my personality and my core value is once you're my friend, you're always my friend. And if we're going to get into this and be true friends, it's going to get a little messy sometimes, but we are committed to you, you know?
And that's a good way to put that. You know, I agree with you. I was going to point out that too. I was going to point out the electronics being a big issue, with boys growing up now, and that's really been for, oh gosh, like 30 years that that we've had the electronics and the games, and of course they have, you know, gotten better and crazier, and you know they are all consuming to a lot of people who actually just stay in their homes and play games. And I've seen this with so many young men. So no wonder they don't have friends. Like you say, they haven't learned how to even talk to anybody face to face. And again, I have to bring up that when I interview people to hire with young men, particularly, I can't even get them to look me in the eye because they are just not used to having that one-on-one relationship. You know, at my house, Judy, it's a little different because my husband is the social butterfly of the two of us by far. He absolutely has so many friends and he keeps in touch with so many friends. And my boys are the same way. They have so many friends still from grade school and they're in their 30s. And the reason that they do is because they were out playing sports. They were out playing soccer and baseball in the street. They were out every day running around with actual people rather than playing games. And I think that that gave them that social advantage that they have today, where these kids today can't communicate in a way that, you know, helps them form friendships because they just don't. They go home and they get onto their electronics and that's kind of it. So I do think that that's a big problem. And one more thing that this study said is that the figure used to be 55% for men that had these close relationships, the six close friends you mentioned. Now it's 27%. Used to be 55% in 1990. So we really have, you know, more than cut in half the close relationships that men have. And I think that for men, close relationships are extremely important between men.
They are. And I think that, you know, you were saying that your boys grew up, that your husband, you know, your husband is really the social butterfly and connects, and that your sons do too. And I think, you know, a key point there was that you said my kids played locally, right, in the neighborhood, soccer, baseball, basketball. What's happening is everybody thinks that their son is going to go pro. Okay, they're going to go be a pro hockey player, pro basketball, pro baseball. And instead of having them play in the local pickup games, right? They're on travel teams. And they're traveling all across the country, right, with their team. And every year they try out for a new team. And so there are not these lifelong, I grew up with you friendships. There's aren't these, you know, where kids in the summertime, when you and I were growing up, the kids in the neighborhood, you know, we'd play baseball all summer long, all the same kids all together playing baseball. There was no future in it. It wasn't like we were playing to become, major league baseball players, but we just played and we played. God forgive me for saying this, but we played cowboys and Indians too.
Yeah, that was great fun.
It was so fun. And we made big hideouts. We built tree houses. And it's almost as if our culture, and I wonder if our culture has become so focused on success, right? And you and I have talked about this in the past, but the moms are not in the home any longer. Everybody's out making a bunch of money to live in the really big house and to take the really big vacations and pay for the overexpensive college educations, right? And they're not at home, right? We're not at home saying, get off of the TV, get off of the gaming, right? Those video games have become the babysitter. And sure. I mean, I remember my mom, you know, fed us in the morning and then shoved us out the door in the summer and literally locked the door and said, don't come back home till lunch. Okay. And yeah, we'd have to go out there and create things together. We forged incredible friendships and we created amazing things and our imaginations grew. So I'm wondering, you know, we can't really, it's difficult to change the culture, but we do have a whole generation of grandparents out there that could, if they're listening, could step in, right? And organize. I mean, if I could, I would go through and organize, you know, some sort of a local baseball game, or even, you know, even before I had kids, I organized a local drama club where we put on incredible plays. You know, I took all the kids in the neighborhood and we, you know, created our own costumes and we built our own backdrops and we had plays like in the driveway, right? Where, you know, the parents came together for an evening of Romeo and Juliet. And it was so much fun. It was so much fun.
They could be proud of the kids that what you just said about building your own backdrops and things. Those are things that kids can actually be proud of and say, I've accomplished something. What do you accomplish on killing, you know, 300 guys in the video game? I mean, that is not what we need for our kids. We need them to feel that sense of pride and accomplishments. And we just had a long discussion about schools, which it's the same thing, that when you learn anything, whether it be playing a sport, whether it be building a fort, whether it be, you know, something in math or reading, and you accomplish it, there is a sense of self and a sense of pride that you can't get anywhere else. We are so losing that. And that's part of the reason I think that these guys are not having friends. So I would say to every woman who has a guy around, whether it's your children or your husband or your brother, whatever it is, hey, get them out and get them out in the world and, you know, get some socializing and some friendships. Those friendships are valuable things for men. They need to have that camaraderie. We all do. Mm-hmm. And it's missing right now, don't you think?
Oh, it is. It is truly, truly missing. I think, you know, what a thought just came into my head. And if we're better at cultivating relationships and growing friendships, right? Naturally, if we really, really love our spouses, if we really love our sons, right? I think that we should take it upon ourselves to create situations to help them. I remember, and I hope my girls don't listen to this, but when Brian always traveled a lot. And we have had two little girls. And what I would do is I would go to the store and I would buy all of these little trinkets, all of these little fun little prizes. And when Brian came home from a trip, I would hug him and kiss him and I would slip two prizes in his pocket. And because he would never remember, right? He'd never remember to do that. And the girls would come running up to him and he'd be like, I got you presents. And every time, and they, you know, it was so wonderful. They were so excited. It was nothing big, you know, they weren't big prizes or anything, but it was just that daddy thought of them. And, I called it setting him up for success as a daddy. And it was, and from there, then like I would buy him postcards and he would write quick notes to his daughters. Right. And then what happened, then it grew within him. He started doing it all on his own. And now he writes the girls a letter every year, recapping the whole year of what they accomplished, what they struggled with and how proud he is of them every single year since they were little. And that didn't have anything to do with me, but I think I laid the groundwork for him.
Yeah. Well, and that's how valuable women are to men.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, why don't you call Jim up and why don't you guys go, you know, a game of golf for Saturday morning or, you know, and just create that idea for him, right? Why don't you guys go on a fishing trip together? Why don't, you know, someone, you meet a new couple and you find out what the guy's into and you set something up, you know? This is funny. The earlier this year, it wasn't this year, it was like maybe last year or the year before. I don't know. But, you know, I'm always super committed, never give up on my friends. But I think I was just having a minute, right? And I came to the conclusion that, you know what, one of my friends, we weren't going to move forward, right? And the relationship was ending and I was allowing it to, okay, which normally doesn't happen, right? And Brian was, you know, sitting down with me, he's like, honey, you know, this, you can't let this happen and this isn't like you and, you know, and then, but sometimes, you know, Linda, it's toxic, right? And yes. You have to let go. But he looked at me and our girls were sitting there and he goes, girls, if this happens, he goes, I'm turning into your mom. He said, and he goes, if this happens, we aren't going to have any friends at all. Do something. Right. It was so funny. Just like if mom, you know, mom's turning into me, right. Our whole family's down the tubes. Right. So,
you know, like I said, in my family, I keep up all the family relationships. My husband definitely keeps up most of the friend relationships. So it works out. Right. It works out for us. Hey, I want to go over with you for just the next 5 minutes or so. I have to tell you that I found this article that I love and I have to run some of these by you. There are crazy food laws in this country in different states. And some of them are absolutely crazy. There's one in every state for sure. But I have to tell you a few. And you can tell me if you've ever broken these laws, okay?
Okay. I'm with you. I probably have. So.
Well, we're going to start in Alabama. In Alabama, you are not allowed to carry an ice cream cone in your back pocket.
Well, I don't know. I have never broken that law myself. But
okay. Well, how about Alaska? In Alaska, feeding alcoholic beverage to a moose is a very serious offense.
That's so hilarious. I haven't tried that one either.
Well, where you live in Arizona, and this one makes sense to me, and I think it'll make sense to you, that since you get so hot over in Arizona, it is considered unlawful to refuse a person a glass of water. And that means an individual or a restaurant or any other business cannot refuse a person a glass of water.
That's interesting. And I can see exactly why that would be put in place. I am drinking so much more water. We're so much more aware of it here than we ever were in Michigan.
Okay.
What's next?
Well, that one makes sense. So in California, if you're in Carmel, California, well, actually they repealed this law, but for a while you were not allowed to eat ice cream while standing on a sidewalk.
Why is that? Do any of these have reasons? Like why this bill or this law was passed?
I don't know. It gets worse from here. In Connecticut, you know, where they make lots of pickles, they have had confusion about the difference between a pickle and a cucumber, apparently, in Connecticut. So the law says that a pickle must bounce to qualify as a pickle.
It must bounce? Yeah, so how do you test that and then eat it? I mean,
I have never bounced a pickle.
Never.
Florida has a law, which it makes no sense to me, but it says that if you are dishwashing in the state of Florida, you're not allowed to break more than 3 dishes per day or chip the edges of more than 4 cups or saucers. Or you, I don't know if you go to jail for that one. You don't seem to go to jail for anything else.
You don't go to jail for anything else. No, you don't. But
in Idaho, this is where you want to live for Valentine's Day. In Idaho, it's illegal for a man to give his sweetheart a box of chocolate weighing less than 50 pounds. Now, I have no idea. I don't understand that. I don't even understand who would make or buy 50 pounds of chocolate. But
oh, my gosh. That's craziness. That is just craziness that that was passed. How many people? How do you pass a law like that?
I have no idea. In Indiana, in Gary, Indiana, specifically, they don't like bad breath there. So according to their laws, if you've eaten garlic in the last 4 hours, you are not allowed to go to a movie theater or ride in a public streetcar.
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't go anywhere. I love garlic.
You would just kind of be garlic. You would kind of be stuck, I think. I don't know.
Stuck at home, eating my garlic.
Yeah. Well, in Louisiana, they have made it a law. You know how kids sometimes they order pizzas and they surprise deliver pizzas to somebody? Well, that is against the law, and it's a $500 fine in Louisiana if you choose to deliver a pizza to somebody who did not order it.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Do you remember the prank calls? Did you ever do prank calls when you were a kid?
Oh, well, do I admit to that?
No. Yeah.
I absolutely did a few prank calls when I was a kid. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my gosh.
They were stupid. They were silly, stupid things, you know? Like something.
Is your refrigerator running?
Yeah exactly. You better go catch it.
Well, you better go catch it, right?
Yeah. In Maryland, you're not allowed to eat while swimming in the ocean. So I have no idea who would
That's interesting.
Make that up.
I mean, I could see that is odd, but I wonder if it has to, are there any sharks in Maryland?
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.